If we do something during our lives and professional careers that qualifies as significant, that accomplishment, as the saying goes, leaves a mark that will most likely outlive any of us. That mark could be something which can rally as well as anger people, depending on their systems of beliefs and understanding of reality. One of the people in public life who has left numerous marks is Vice President Dick Cheney. Cheney has been seen as an individual who looked behind the scenes, and when he spoke out, typically did so in a situation which he was in control of. My next guest has brought an exception to that Cheney rule. He was given face-to-face access with the former vice president, where he was able to ask Cheney about his public service career, the major issues he confronted, and the people that he served and worked with. The result of that conversation is the new book, Cheney One-on-One, A Candid Conversation with America's Most Controversial Statesman, written by Fox News Washington correspondent James Rosen. Good morning, James.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on a fantastic book because, much like with anything in life, image versus knowledge through education brings you about to a different image of a person. I think that's what you are going to do with Dick Cheney with your new book.
That's right, Chris. In Cheney One-on-One, I interviewed the former vice president for close to 10 hours at his home, in his study, in Northern Virginia last December, shortly before he was to turn 74 years of age. And I can promise you and our listeners that you have never heard Dick Cheney open up the way he does in this book, Cheney One-on-One. We covered his entire life, from his childhood and his relationships with his parents to his views as a Christian and his spiritual journey, something you almost never hear Dick Cheney talk about, to the five presidents he's worked for and with, including his up-close observations of Ronald Reagan, stuff that's not in Cheney's own memoir, all the way, of course, through 9/11 and the Iraq War. If you care about where this country's been for the past 40 years, when this man, Dick Cheney, has really stood uniquely at the pinnacle of power through several presidencies, or if you care about where the country's going, you're going to want to read this book, Cheney One-on-One.
You get Dick Cheney to talk about his, well, shall we say, less than stellar years during college. And
oh, yes. Yeah. And now Dick Cheney attended Yale on a scholarship and flunked out, and along the way racked up two DUIs. He told me, and I don't think this has ever come out anywhere else, about how when he was at Yale, first of all, it was the first time that this native of Nebraska and Wyoming had ever traveled that far east in his life with this scholarship to Yale. And he told me about how he and his friends at Yale, the guys he lived with, they had all these bedrooms that opened up onto a common area, but they devoted one of the bedrooms to being a bar. And he drank too much beer. And after the second DUI, when he woke up in jail overnight, he decided that was his wake-up call. And many years later, when he was nominated to become defense secretary under the first President Bush, his nomination followed the failed nomination of Senator John Tower, whose nomination kind of went up in flames amid allegations of drinking too much. And so Cheney, as a matter of prudence, even though it was many years prior at that point, did inform the Senate Armed Services Committee about these two DUIs of his. And Senator Sam Nunn of Georgia at the time said, "So how did you clean up your act, Dick?" And Cheney said, "It was easy. I stopped drinking and I got married and I quit hanging out in bars." But he still does enjoy a drink from time to time. And he's just not the caricature that people think of him as being, Chris. This is not Darth Vader. And one of the chief aims of Cheney One-on-One is to rescue this man from caricature, because he's too important for that.
Well, that's the thing, too, with the subtitle of Cheney 101, A Candid Conversation with America's Most Controversial Statesman. Does Cheney see himself or understand his perception of being controversial?
Absolutely, and he knows that he has critics. But one of the keys to his success, I really think, over time, has been the fact that he doesn't worry himself too much with what critics are saying. One thing about Dick Cheney, as an elected official who never lost an election, and as a public servant over the decades, is that he wasn't the kind of politician to change his positions just because some shift in the political landscape might have made it convenient for him to do so. And as I say, you know, he's not Darth Vader, but he knows that that image is out there. The last, very last question I asked him at the end of the 10 hours marked the first time that I allowed those words, Darth Vader, to escape my lips. And I asked him if he thinks that that caricature of him is going to prevail in historical memory of him, and as a consequence, whether he thinks he is popularly or widely misunderstood. And he just told me, in essence, that he doesn't spend a great deal of time worrying about what his critics think of him, and he just feels proud to have taken part in so many historic events.
which explains his survival in a pit bull environment such as politics at all levels for all those years. We're talking with Chief Washington Correspondent for Fox News, James Rosen, about his new book, Cheney 101, a candid conversation with America's most controversial statesman here on Issues and Ideas. Day one, day two, day three is how the book is divided, and going into each chapter, you get a preview of what's going to be addressed, although there are some veerings and surprises along the way. And with someone who is so has so much of his life associated with and guided by people in public life, from Congress to the White House and foreign affairs, all points in between, when you look at Cheney's early years, were political idols or heroes a greater guiding force and foundation builder for him, or was it his parents and his family?
It was his parents and his family, and we talk at great depth about those relationships. There did come a point where he had mentioned in his memoir, he had said that his father was a reticent man with words, someone who didn't give away very much on the first or even the tenth meeting. And I asked him, how did you know then that he loved you? Because a lot of little boys, if their dad doesn't talk very much, you know, they don't necessarily get the reassurance that they seek from their fathers about the fact that they are loved and that their fathers are proud of them and that sort of thing. And this was one point where he kind of pushed back and said to me, don't try and psychoanalyze me. I know he loved me from the time we spent together. And but he also said, I said, what attributes of your mother's do you think contributed to your eventual success in life? And he talked about how his mother played sports competitively and, in fact, went traveled statewide in Wyoming. And in the 1940s and 50s, this was a big deal, and earlier than that for his mom, playing on the girls' softball team and traveled around the state. And so I thought it was fascinating that when I asked what attributes of his mother's may have contributed to his success, he talked about her competition, her competitiveness in sports. Cheney himself was a good athlete as a kid. Played basketball, played baseball, and so I think that that helped contribute to his success as well, and that competitive streak in Dick Cheney.
James gets Cheney to talk about, as I've said, a variety of topics, personal, including his daughter Mary and her coming out and the situation of how that was like within the family of recent events, Keystone XL Pipeline, and how Cheney sees that situation, how he believes it should be handled, and obviously September 11th. And within that timeline, James, with September 11th and radical Islamic terrorism, how does Cheney look at that situation and that day? Was it a long-range wide, was the camera lens wide open looking at everything happening, or in a day like that and the events unfolding like that, everything from Bush arguing that he wanted to be back in the White House and Cheney having to argue with Bush about, you know, you're better off, you need to stay out right now. Does he look at things more in a pinpoint fashion?
Well, I guided him through the discussion, Chris, and we really did take the day of 9/11, that horrific crisis morning, almost minute by minute, and he narrates in really riveting fashion in Cheney One-on-One the moment when his own Secret Service agents busted into the vice president's office in the White House, literally removed him by the seat of his pants from his chair, dragged him out of his own office, dragged him down to what's known as the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, which is the PEOC, the bunker beneath the White House. And he said everybody was stunned. And in fact, he used a very interesting phrase with me, Chris. He said that amongst the senior policy staff in the White House, there was a shock and awe for all of them that the Twin Towers had been attacked like this. And of course, shock and awe is a phrase we associate later with the Iraq War.
Sure.
And he's watching weapons get passed around. The communications facilities are not up to scratch. As you just described in the question, he gave a piece of advice very early on to George W. Bush. The president didn't like it, resisted it, but finally listened to Dick Cheney, and that was stay out of Washington until we get our hands around this thing. He talked about the fog of war and how they were getting false reports minute by minute of pipe bombs going off at the State Department, of a plane being headed for Camp David, of there being six planes instead of four involved in the attack. And one of the most sensitive things you can ask Dick Cheney about has to do with that day, and I pressed him on this more than any reporter or historian ever has, was the shoot-down order that he conveyed to the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, for the plane that ultimately crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, but which was thought at that time to be headed for the White House or the Capitol Dome. And there's a recording of this where Cheney tells the Secretary of Defense that if that plane enters Washington airspace, it is to be shot down by the U.S. military. And Rumsfeld, with a certain astonishment in his voice, says, on whose authority, Dick? And because, as we know, the vice president does not stand anywhere in the military chain of command.
Right.
And Cheney said that President Bush himself had conferred that authority on him in an earlier phone call. The problem is, in the 8 logs of conversations of the principals for that day, there is no recorded entry for such a call between Bush and Cheney, given the timeline. And so I asked him, I said, do you understand how even for supporters of Dick Cheney, this makes them uncomfortable because it places you in the awkward and unusual position for you of asserting something for which there is no documentary evidence? And he said, no. He said, it's always been murky how many calls there were. We've never been able to nail them all down. But this was the reason why, he told me, that he and George W. Bush appeared jointly, and that was a unique arrangement for them, as witnesses before the 9/11 Commission.
Wrapping up time with James Rosen, chief Washington correspondent for Fox News, with his new book, Cheney 101, A Candid Conversation with America's Most Controversial Statesman, here on Issues and Ideas. You mentioned how Cheney, speaking of himself, presents a more accurate, different image than what is perceived, much like the Chevy Chase of Gerald Ford, which Cheney also talks about, too, in Cheney 101 of Dick Cheney. Is there anyone, without tipping the hand, without detail, but just as a little nudge for the prospective reader, is there anyone who Dick Cheney talks about, given all the names and all the power players that he worked with and had been around, does Cheney make revelations about any one person specifically that changed your view of that person?
Interesting. I'd have to give that thought, I think. But, you know, he talked about being up close with Richard Nixon. And at the time when Cheney was working for Don Rumsfeld in the Nixon White House, Cheney was so young and green that he was the chart flipper for Rumsfeld when Rumsfeld would make presentations to President Nixon. But many years later, Cheney got to know former President Nixon. And he recounts, and again, this is not in his own memoir, an occasion where he was one of a number of members of Congress in the 1980s when Cheney was in the House GOP leadership, being summoned to the Jefferson Hotel in downtown Washington for a cordial cocktail session with former President Nixon. And it was a midterm election year, and he recalls the stunning accuracy with which Nixon surveyed the political landscape that year and more or less predicted correctly how every single race was going to turn out. And he said it was just an astonishing session to see this politically astute man, still somehow in disgrace after Watergate in the mid-1980s, but with such a sharp political antenna. And I think he has great respect for Nixon, and particularly for his work on foreign affairs.
That's something Nixon also demonstrated in his post-presidency books as well. And this is another must add to your personal library, especially if you are a political junkie, which I know you are since you listen to this show, Cheney 101, A Candid Conversation with America's Most Controversial Statesman. Only way to the facts is go to the source, and that's what James Rosen did. He is the chief Washington correspondent for Fox News. James Rosen, fantastic job with a man who, judging by his answers, was reluctant in day one, or maybe he's just reluctant about talking about himself, but he opens up greatly day two and three, at least that's my perception at least. But through all 3 days, you made valuable use of that time and documented a lot of history, which that too lives on forever. Thanks for being here.
Chris, thank you so much.